Thanks for listening to the Doug Gottlieb Show podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday, 3 to 6 Eastern, 12 to 3 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for the Doug Gottlieb Show at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR.
Now let's get this party started.
You're listening to Fox Sports Radio.
Week one almost in the books for college football. One more to go tonight. Ole Miss, without head coach Lane Kiffin because of COVID, is going up against Louisville. Then it's looking ahead to week two. Some amazing games in week two for college football on Fox, Oregon, Ohio State. We talked about the Battle of the Cy-Hawk Trophy in Iowa as Iowa travels to Iowa State. Aaron, did you know that on Friday, Kansas is at Coastal Carolina?
I did see that. By the way, how about this? As a 27-point underdog, almost a 4-touchdown underdog to Coastal Carolina.
I was wondering who was paying who for that game.
That's a great question.
I mean, right? I mean, maybe Kansas is getting the check to go and play at Coastal Carolina. That is a question that we need to have answered before we break away for today's show.
I can tell you this. They've played twice, 2 years in a row at Kansas, and Coastal Carolina's won both games. So this might go down as the worst transaction in the history of college athletics, depending on how it all ends up shaking out.
And I did just see that your boy Randy Edsall is now retiring immediately.
So there's no story out yet, just yes, but the people who cover the beat are reporting that Randy Edsall is stepping down immediately. He announced his retirement at the end of the season last year. Who knows? There could be some news. I don't want to jump to too many conclusions, but this was a guy that last year pushed for the school to cancel the season, one of two teams that did not play, and now the reports are that he is leaving effective immediately. If that's the case, and there's no health reasons, there's no physical reasons, that's an absolute embarrassment because he just basically hijacked 2 years from his players that he claims to care about, willing to wait and see if more details come out. But I think it's a pretty embarrassing move if it's simply just leaving for the sake of leaving.
Hey, when we tell you on Fox Sports Radio that we are covering college football from the top to bottom,
we doesn't absolutely get much more bottom than that.
No. And we will fast track all the way to the top because another takeaway from this past weekend, while Oklahoma, I don't want to say struggled, but got more than they maybe more than they expected from Tulane on Saturday. You had Ohio State and Minnesota play a pretty good one on Thursday night. And then you had Clemson and Georgia in their dogfight. Of the top schools that we thought entering the season, Alabama was the only one to kind of have a cakewalk in week one, and they ended up playing the 14th ranked Miami Hurricane. So in college football, the defending national champions show that even without Mac Jones, without Devontae Smith, without Najee Harris, without Jalen Waddle, the more things change, the more they stay the same when it comes to the Crimson Tide.
It is unbelievable. And I know, like, right now it's become such a cliche of, you don't want to play Bama with more than 1 week to prepare. But, you know, I heard Colin talk a little bit about this morning, is the idea that they're always so prepared. I get that they have better players than a lot of people, but I mean, you know, Miami is not the least talented team going, and Alabama's played USC in these openers. Alabama has played Wisconsin in these openers, Florida State. I mean, good programs. It's not as though they're playing Sisters of the Poor, and to come out every single year and just completely dominate and embarrass these teams, it's just incredible. Saban is there. We take for granted how great this guy is, but I mean, there really is nobody like him, and there's never going to be anybody like him again.
No, to be able we were talking about Ed Orgeron earlier and the problems that LSU is having, which seems to coincide with the loss of their top assistants after their national championship season, and saying that it's not foreign for other schools to also have to go through this. I think that Ohio State is still kind of trying to sort out a little bit when Jeff Hafley left for the Boston College gig. It's the fact that Bill O'Brien could lose Nick Saban could lose Steve Sarkisian and just bring in Bill O'Brien as his offensive coordinator. I mean, you're talking about college football, and we talk about how good Clemson is and how Clemson is, tried to reach the level of Alabama and Ohio State trying to do and trying to close that gap, and Georgia taking Alabama to an overtime in a national championship, and a game they probably should have won. In the bigger picture, Aaron, it shows how far Alabama is ahead of everyone else. That Bill O'Brien says, you know what the best thing for my career is not to go be an NFL head coach again, or to be an offensive coordinator in the NFL, or to be a head coach in college like he was at Penn State. His best option is to go to Alabama, get paid a lot of money, and be their offensive coordinator. There is no other program that is happening in college football. It's not even close. And that to me tells you how much Alabama is ahead of everybody else.
Well, I remember when Bill Belichick. Imagine if he did hire Bill Belichick.
He probably will run his defense.
Yes. So, well, what I remember when Bill O'Brien and Doug Marrone, who was obviously the former Jags and Bills coach, is the offensive line coach. Okay. So let's take it a step further. Last year, an NFL head coach is now a position coach at Alabama. One, it speaks to the idea that it really is a rehab program, and I know people have used that term before, but Lane Kiffin, Steve Sarkisian, Mike Locksley, on and on and on. But for NFL guys, as you said, Dan, to come down and say, the best thing I could do, come here, get out of the spotlight, we're going to win a bunch, I'm going to learn, I'm going to get another opportunity, it speaks to what he's built, and two, it speaks to what you said, just miles ahead, where nobody else could pull this off. There's no other college coach in America that could convince two NFL head coaches that were in the league last year. We're not talking about a guy that was there 10 years ago and has been out of football for 6 years. We're talking about guys that were NFL head coaches last year that are now taking position and coordinator coaches at Alabama. It's just, it's incredible. And it's what you said. That's the only way to put it. It speaks to what a different level this is relative to everything else in college football.
There is no longer fun for me to watch Alabama. It's not. It's amazing on how great they continue to be. There was a point in the game against Miami, and I know Miami only had a 3-man rush. I thought the play was called dead because of how Bryce Young just had so much time and nobody was around him. That's how much time. Again, it was only a 3-man rush, but Bryce Young ended up rolling out, and then he ended up pitching it out to a back on the side. But I thought the play was called dead. That told you how much time Bryce Young and Alabama had on that specific play against Miami, and it's just it's dominance. And when Clemson ended up winning those national titles over Alabama, I felt that the gap was closer, and I felt that the other schools were able to close that gap. Last year, to see what Alabama did against a really good Ohio State team, and who the team that I actually thought was the second best team in the country, and to end up dominating like they did, just tells you how big the gap is. And then just to have Alabama lose all those guys and reload, and now you're taking an Ohio State transfer like Jamison Williams comes in and catches a 96-yard touchdown or whatever it ended up being. It never stops, and I think it's frustrating. It's one thing to be in the NFL and the Patriots, where we think everything is based on parity, and even though the Patriots have Tom Brady, there still could be a chance that a Ray Lewis Ravens team could go in there and beat them. I just don't think that's the case right now in college football. And even if Alabama loses a game because of the way that it's set up, we still think that they're the best team in the country, so they get the benefit of the doubt. If there's any discussion about who should get into the playoff, it's not fun to watch Alabama anymore because of how good they are.
Well, and I think we talked about it earlier in the show. This is why Georgia is important this year. This is why Texas A&M, I think, is important. And I don't think Texas A&M, this is the year that they're going to topple them. But you need – part of the Alabama fatigue, I get it. I don't mind it as much. But I'm not mad that Alabama is this good, and I know you're not either. I'm not saying that you are. I just want to see somebody step up to their level. And it's kind of bringing full circle all of the conversations that we've had today, Dan, because it goes to Coach O. He has that 1 year with Joe Burrow. They go to Tuscaloosa. Coach O does the big post-game speech that ends up getting caught on social media, and one of the players got in trouble for it. But you're hoping at that point that LSU has now elevated themselves to the level of Alabama, and this is going to be a yearly thing. And so that is my hope, that whether LSU LSU figures out a way to bounce back, whether it's Georgia, whether it's A&M, that there is somebody that can consistently rise to their level, because I get the idea that there is fatigue, and I get the idea that every year we put together these paper champions or these paper tigers that look good, like a Miami, like a whoever, and they don't live up to it. I'm optimistic that somewhere down the road, somewhere this year, whether it's Georgia, whether it is Texas A&M, somebody steps up to the table, because Alabama needs somebody, I think, in the SEC to compete with them. I think it's good for the sport, and it's something that's desperately needed.
I actually think that, you know, if Clemson or Ohio State wins a national championship, it wouldn't change as much, because Ohio State is loathed by the Big Ten schools because of how dominant they were, you know, or are. I think that, you know, Clemson's the same way in the ACC. I don't know how you can, you know, not be somewhat annoyed if you're an ACC school. And in my mind, it would be difficult to root for a Clemson team to you know, win a national championship, because I don't know how much it changes other than Alabama winning. What I think would be unique, and I don't think, and this is not meant to be any offense, and I know Iowa State feels like I've offended them already, but I'll include them. But if you took an Iowa State, if you took a Wisconsin, if you took a Cincinnati, and those schools happened to win a national championship, I don't think it would be as big of a deal as, say, a program like USC, as Michigan, as Texas. I think we need some new blood.
Yes.
But I also think that blood has to be a
familiar,
a blue blood.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Like a Wisconsin, which is my alma mater, I'll just use them. If they win, nobody's thinking that Wisconsin is at the level of Alabama, or it would even be at Ohio State. It would be like, oh, that's a 1 year sort of thing. But if you put now a USC or a Michigan or a Texas into the mix, I think that changes a lot. And I think that's maybe what college football needs, is somebody else to break into that group of four or five that we had. Because when you looked at the odds this year, Oklahoma, Georgia, Clemson, Ohio State, and Alabama, there was such a huge gap from those teams to everybody else that had a chance to win a national crown.
So Arnie Spanier and I, after the week zero loss by Nebraska, we had this conversation of who are the programs that need, because it's like you said, there needs to be, and it's not just Alabama. In the ACC, there's nobody on Clemson's level. In the Big 12, there really is nobody on Oklahoma's level, as long as they're in the Big 12. And we went through, and it is the Nebraskas, it is the Michigans, it is all the programs you mentioned, whoever it might be, because those are the programs where I think it's sustainable, right? Like, if USC somehow gets back to the level where in a one game scenario in the playoff they can beat Alabama or Clemson, they're the kind of school that can sustain it, right? I don't know that Iowa State can. No disrespect, we got Iowa State fans tuning in, I know, because we said their jerseys are maroon and they're not, they're something else. They were tweeting at me all day, but I bring it up because, you know, Michigan, USC, Nebraska, maybe. Those are the schools that can sustain it. They can recruit the players. They have the resources. They have the fan. They have the financial support. I don't know that a Cincinnati can. Doesn't mean they can't beat Alabama in a one-game scenario. Don't know that they can sustain it. And so I'm with you. I hope over these next couple years, again, whether it's Georgia, A&M, or one of those programs that isn't close yet, like a Texas, like a Michigan, Penn State, whoever steps up.
He's Aaron Torres. I'm Dan Beyer. It's an extended version of the Doug Gottlieb Show on this Labor Day. I know some of you are used to hearing RJ Bell and the crew on Straight Out of Vegas, but you've got me and Aaron for the next 45 minutes or so as we are sitting in here on Fox Sports Radio. When a train hits a vehicle at a railway crossing, the results are often deadly. Be cautious at crossings, and if the signals are going, don't be tempted to try and sneak across the tracks, even if you don't see a train. Stop. Trains can't. Paid for by NHTSA. Get Aaron on Twitter at Aaron_Torres. You can find me on Twitter at Dan Beyer on Fox. Ben Roethlisberger's been called a lot of names in his career. Can we add another to the list? We'll explain next here on Fox Sports Radio.
Be sure to catch the live edition of the Doug Gottlieb Show weekdays at 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific.
He's Aaron Torres. I'm Dan Beyer. It is a Labor Day edition of the Doug Gottlieb Show, an extended edition of the Doug Gottlieb Show here on Fox Sports Radio. Happy to have you with us. Hope if you are traveling that you are being safe and that you get to your destination, likely back home, safe and sound. Joining us now, another working guy, or we're putting to work on Labor Day. He's the lead NFL analyst for Pro Football Focus. Sam Monson joins us again here on Fox Sports Radio. Hey, Sam, how's your Monday going?
It's going well. How about you guys?
Doing well. There's no complaints looking back at the college football weekend and looking ahead to the NFL. And when I teased your appearance coming on a little bit earlier, said Ben Roethlisberger's been called a lot of names throughout his career, and I have to pay off the tease because there was a piece that you guys just did on Pro Football Focus about one Ben Roethlisberger. Is it fair to actually call Ben Roethlisberger an underdog entering the season?
I think so. I mean, the Steelers have been almost written off all the way through the offseason, and we were as guilty as anybody. Even on our podcast, we've been talking about the Steelers as a team that looks like they're in trouble. An offensive line that's gone a complete overhaul, and it wasn't a good unit to start with. Roethlisberger looked not great last season at all. I know that they were, the NFL's last undefeated team at one point at 11-0. But Roethlisberger was never grading well. You know, it was all underneath stuff. He wasn't making the kind of plays we've seen from him in the past and was making way more mistakes than he was being punished for at any point. So all of a sudden, you put all this together, given the collapse at the end of the year, and everybody was sort of saying, well, Cleveland is a team to beat. Baltimore is a team to beat. But Pittsburgh, their time at the top of this division might be done. But all of a sudden, you start to look at their offensive line through preseason. Okay, it is only preseason, but it didn't look bad. Roethlisberger only played a few snaps, but his arm looked lively. He looked to be more the player he was before elbow surgery. So, there's a chance that we may have written him off a bit too soon.
So, Sam, I see on one of your most recent tweets, you put out some great highlights of Barry Sanders. So I want to bring up another former Detroit Lion as it pertains to this season, and that's, of course, Matthew Stafford. Just I find him to be such a dynamic player, interesting player coming into this year because of the fact that the Rams have basically said, look, we're a quarterback away. This is the guy that's not only going to get us to the Super Bowl because we've been there. He's going to put us over the top. What do you make of not only that move, but does the Rams' trajectory change at all in your mind with Matthew Stafford now quarterback?
Yeah, I mean, I think Matthew Stafford is unquestionably a better quarterback than Jared Goff. The question is, how much better? And really, the Rams have taken this big bet on the fact that it is this seismic upgrade and that the things that Matthew Stafford is good at, which is, creating outside of, not necessarily outside of structure, but outside of the design of the play and being able to threaten different areas, whereas Jared Goff was a lot more of a paint-by-numbers type of quarterback where he will do what you instruct him to do and he'll throw the ball where it's supposed to go on any given play. But if a defense takes that away post-snap, Goff was not great at adjusting and finding something different to do with the ball. That's where Stafford is really good. But when you look at sort of how it shakes out over the course of a season, Matthew Stafford has never had a PFF grade above 82 over a full season. And that's a good mark. It's decent. It's as good as you're going to see from a Jared Goff, but it's like it's significantly below the very top quarterbacks in the NFL. The guys at the head of the league last year: Aaron Rodgers, 94.5; Tom Brady, 92; Deshaun Watson, Patrick Mahomes, Josh Allen. All these guys were above 90, and Stafford has never really threatened that area of the elite grading. So what we're seeing is this kind of gamble or this degree of confidence that Sean McVay has in saying, if you get me a quarterback that can do some special things when the play breaks down, I'm good enough with my play design with this offense that the baseline is going to be higher from him than we've ever seen before.
Sam Monson joining us here on Fox Sports Radio. He's Aaron Torres. I'm Dan Byer sitting in on an extended version of the Doug Gottlieb Show. Sam, the lead NFL analyst for Pro Football Focus. I kind of have a two-part question, and it has to deal with a team in the NFC West, and that's the 49ers. The first part of it is, how much does the rotating quarterbacks in San Francisco affect you guys in grading? I mean, is it easier because there's fewer plays by Jimmy Garoppolo? Does it make it more confusing because now they may be swapping on drives? But does it affect anything you guys do ratings-wise?
It doesn't really affect anything, but the people that I feel the most sorry for are the guys that sort of input our, our box score, our base data, the first layer, because those are the guys – keeping track of which quarterback is in the game. When the people go in to do the actual grading, the jersey number is already in the system. It's already there. It's very difficult to make a mistake. But the first run guys have got to pay attention to which quarterback's going to be in there if they're doing it drive by drive.
Gotcha. Okay, so then my second part is, can this actually work in San Francisco with Jimmy Garoppolo and Trey Lance?
I think so. I've been kind of talking up over the last few weeks that even if it's not the 49ers, one team this year I think is going to have some kind of, you know, two-quarterback system, and I think it can work. It's worked in the past. You know, Bill Walsh used to do it to sort of get Joe Montana into the game. That was how he kind of blooded him in the NFL, was Joe Montana was the red zone quarterback. I think it was Steve DeBerg who was doing the difficult job of moving between the 20s, and then Joe Montana kind of got the layup at the end of the drive to try and score the touchdown. The Cardinals, when they had Matt Leinart and he was struggling, would have Kurt Warner, I think, come in for the opposite. Kurt Warner was the red zone quarterback, and Matt Leinart was getting the between the 20s gig. And those are not, like, those are quarterbacks that had similar skill sets. I think it makes even more sense if you have quarterbacks that have a vastly disparate skill set, and not only are you bringing two guys in that, you know, both potentially deserve playing time, but they're very different quarterbacks to have to defend and to game plan for. So it's immediately stressing a defense every single week that has to prepare for both of them. So I'm all in favor of doing that if you have the kind of quarterbacks for whom it makes sense. And I think it does make sense for the 49ers.
Sam, is there just a team out there that your metrics or, you know, your data say is either going to be significantly better or significantly worse than maybe the public expects?
I'm not sure there's any that we deviate massively from compared to the sort of general consensus. I think when you start to look at it, it's more or less the same contenders. One, I think, is the New Orleans Saints that people were very quick to write off, a little bit like the Steelers. I think two teams that we've forgotten about almost, or that we've written the eulogy on too soon, are the Steelers and the Saints. As much as the Saints are obviously going to be a completely different team without Drew Brees there, Jameis Winston is not a terrible quarterback, and he immediately brings something to the table that Drew Brees hadn't in the last couple of years, which is the ability to threaten all areas of the field. You know, when things started to go badly, defenses knew that Drew Brees couldn't throw it 50 yards on a rope anymore. Is the field and the coverage, and concentrate on the areas that Brees was going to be targeting. You can't do that with Jameis Winston. He has an arm and the willingness to put it out there. And, you know, the rest of that Saints roster is still in good shape. If Jameis Winston has a reasonable performance and can cut down on some of the mistakes he made in a much more aggressive style of offense, like, the Saints could still be a very difficult team to face this year.
Is it as just as simple as him not throwing interceptions?
That's the biggest headline, the biggest ticket item to tick off. It's just fewer interceptions. Turnover level mistakes. He's always been extremely high in that number, even before the Bruce Arians season and the 30-30 year. He's always put the ball in harm's way more than you would like, but also just general mistakes, general bad plays, you know, missing throws, simple routine errors. He's ranked in the 98th percentile since he came into the NFL in the percentage of his throws that are positively graded at PFF. So obviously that's right up there with the best quarterbacks in the NFL. But he's in the second percentile in terms of the percentage that are negatively graded. So most quarterbacks, you know, are somewhere in the middle. But Jameis is at either end of the extremes. He's either making a good positive play, moving the chains, or he's making some kind of mistake, even if it's not an interception or a turnover level type of play, just a miss, you know, just an inaccurate pass or some kind of error. So it's not just the interceptions, but he just needs to cut down on the volume of mistakes, both big and small.
I'm so excited. We talked about this earlier on the show, but I'm so excited to say this week, I can't wait to see this week what Jameis Winston has against Green Bay, even though the game is in Jacksonville. Sam, we appreciate the time. We know it's busy. We know it's a Labor Day holiday. So very grateful for your time and can't wait to talk to you again.
Anytime, guys. Take it easy.
It's not even a silver lining when it comes to LSU, Aaron, for what happened this past weekend against UCLA. And I know that Ed Orgeron is not looking at it as a silver lining. However, I will tip my cap to LSU for scheduling a game at UCLA in the first place. And I know that college football, the landscape is changing, and that there are schools that are that used to not schedule home and homes. They would only like neutral site fields that are within driving distance of their campuses, not naming any names, but they rhyme with Alabama. I know that those times are changing, Aaron. However, LSU has been doing this for a while where they have not been afraid. Maybe they do a home and home or a near and near where you're playing somewhat near your fan base, but they've gone into enemy territory multiple times, including this past weekend in Los Angeles, and I give them credit for doing so because there are other programs that wouldn't travel or take their teams to those spots.
Yeah, I think outside of the school that rhymes with Ralabama, we won't name who that is. I believe there's some stat that like Florida hasn't played an out of conference game outside the state of Florida in like 28 years or something, because they play Florida State every year. That's their big out of conference game.
Yeah.
So I could be wrong on that. Gators fans, if you want to get mad at me, you're allowed to get mad at me. But I only bring it up to say that this is something that LSU has done. We were talking, really about Joe Burrow earlier in the show in the year that he had. The year that they had Joe Burrow, the game that gave everyone confidence, like, oh, this team might actually be pretty good, they being LSU, was when they went to Texas in a true road game and got the win. And so, listen, I think it goes without saying, it's good for college football. I do think as time goes on, we are going to see more of these true home and homes. To Alabama's credit, they are actually going to be playing true road games here in the next couple years. They're actually supposed to play at Texas before Texas becomes an SEC or becomes an SEC member. There's a few other ones on the schedule as well.
At Ohio State in about 6 years. So.
At Ohio State. And I'll say this too, Dan, and I've said this many times over the last couple days as I've been on air here. I live in Pasadena, not far from the Rose Bowl, and it's great for the fans too. I mean, the number of LSU fans I talked to that were so fired up, you know, outside of everything that happened in that state last week, and we know what happened, and we're thinking about those people in Louisiana that still might not have power and destruction and all that stuff. But just to, one, get away from that, but two, go somewhere else, do something different. This is the first time LSU had ever played at the Rose Bowl, and I talked to a lot of fans walking around town before the game. I don't know how they felt after the game, but before the game, they were fired up to see a different place, to see this Rose Bowl that they see every year on New Year's Day, to see their own team walk through that tunnel. I think it's great for college football. I hope more teams continue to do it, and you're right, Dan, it is a credit to LSU for actually getting on the road, flying across country, and doing this.
A couple of stories to pass along, because it was the scheduling in college football has always been a thing. Like, I remember when Jim Tressel was at Ohio State, they tried to schedule a marquee opponent each year because they felt it helped in recruiting. So they had a home and home with Texas. Vince Young and the Longhorns went to Columbus and knocked off the Buckeyes on their way to the national championship, and Ohio State the next year went to Austin and beat Texas. And you talk about LSU. LSU did this with Wisconsin, where the first meeting was in Houston. So they played the home of the Texans, NRG Stadium. I think that's what it's still called. And then the return trip wasn't in Madison. It was in Green Bay. But it's basically a home game for Wisconsin because it's mostly fans, Wisconsin fans attending that game. And the same thing that you would have in Houston with LSU fans. It was not an exact home and home of Baton Rouge and Madison, but close enough. And to play a college football game at Lambeau Field's pretty cool. But I bring up Wisconsin for the point that you just said, is it was a known fact that athletic department would try to schedule at least once in a 4 year cycle of scheduling a game at Hawaii or scheduling a game with UNLV. Because fans like to travel to those games. So you would face UNLV, so then all the fan base would go to Las Vegas, or you would get a game at Hawaii because they would kind of wanted, in a way, to reward the fan base or allow the fan base to go in different places. And I think that is something that other college programs, now college football may be a little different, but that's what Wisconsin would try to do for years, just for the fan base.
Well, we saw a couple days ago, LSU scheduled a game 2024 to open the season against USC in Las Vegas at the new Raider Stadium. So, no, and that's, you know, and I get it, right, is because of this college football playoff era, some schools are, I don't want to say afraid. I don't think Alabama is afraid to schedule anybody, but you have to find that balance of, we want to put together a a game or two that our fans can get to that is an entertaining opponent. And I think that's why, by the way, Alabama plays all these games in Atlanta and Orlando. It's because it's close enough where their fans can get to, but it's not the true road experience, and it does take away a little something from that opening night game. But I also just think that it's still cool to see the true home and road venue split. And so, like I said, and you even said it a little bit earlier when we were talking about Coach O, is that there were a lot of LSU fans there, but it was just cool to have it in a true home field environment. And so these games are great for college football, and we talked about it a little bit earlier, but we're going to get a couple more this weekend with Oregon traveling to Ohio State, with Washington traveling to Michigan. And I do hope that as the college football playoff expands and as we go further away from one loss potentially ruining your season, that we get more of these fun early season games.
I want to wrap up with a story because I mentioned Wisconsin going to Hawaii and Las Vegas. It was in 2002, Wisconsin ended up playing at UNLV. And because of the amount, there were a lot of Wisconsin fans at this nice game. And Wisconsin, you know what happens when you go to Las Vegas and you're from a school and your team's in town? You go bet on your team, right? That's
okay.
This is 2002. So imagine the amount of Wisconsin fans. And by the way, I had a lot of relatives that they went vacation in Florida. They would go on vacation in Las Vegas. That would be the place that they would go. So Wisconsin and Las Vegas had this, for some reason, this connection. The point being this is there were tons and tons of Badger fans at this game. Wisconsin's up by 20 points midway through the fourth quarter, and the lights go out. The lights go out at Sam Boyd Stadium, and they are unable to finish the game, wiping out all of the bets for that game,
goodness,
not making it official. And the theory and the thought has always been because the sports book would have taken such a hit because of the amount of Wisconsin fans that were in Las Vegas at the time. Like, think about this. How in the world does Las Vegas have a power outage? Like, that city is built on lights.
That's
right.
True.
I mean, that's all that it is. But somehow, in a football game with 7 minutes left in the fourth quarter and Wisconsin up by 20, the lights just end up, out of nowhere going out in the power outage. They were unable to finish the game, and that was a wrap.
Well,
but yeah, that happened in like 2002.
I have a story that can corroborate a lot of what you said, although it may or may not be true, and that is I do go to Las Vegas a lot. It's like my little getaway, just for a night or two if I just need to get away, just blow off some steam, go to the sports book, watch some games, really frankly do nothing different than I would do here. You just do it in a little bit of a different place.
Mm-hmm.
But I was there on one NFL Sunday, and there was an unbelievable Packers contingent at, and it wasn't like a Packers bar. We were just at a bar. The Packers were playing, and every other person there had a Packers jersey. And I was like talking to the waitress. I said, "Oh my goodness, there are a lot of Packers fans here." She told me, I don't know if there's any way if this is true to corroborate it. She said the number two most visited state from out of state visitors in Las Vegas. Number one is California. Number two is Wisconsin.
I would not doubt that for 1 minute. That's
I have no idea if it's true, but
yeah.
And I remember telling people were like, that seems impossible. And I said, I mean, does it really though? I mean, listen, everything outside of basically California is a plane ride away. Wisconsin fans, I mean, people from Wisconsin, it's cold during the winter. You want to do something different. Everybody loves going to Vegas for an NFL Sunday and just throwing down and watching games and having that fun vibe. It didn't really surprise me, especially with all of the people that I saw in the stadium that day or in the restaurant that day. But again, it was crazy, and it doesn't surprise me that that Barry Alvarez, the legend, used to schedule some games there. So
he's Aaron Torres. I'm Dan Beyer. This is Fox Sports Radio, an extended version of the Doug Gottlieb Show. Get Aaron on Twitter at Aaron_Torres. By the way, you follow Aaron on social media. He's giving you winners each week when it comes to picks.
We're trying.
Was week one good for you?
It was good. I could have used Wisconsin to cover, speaking of the devil. But other than that, no, it was a winning week. I was very happy with the results. Yeah, man. Love college football and love, small, responsible wagers, but small, responsible wagers nonetheless.
You can find me on Twitter at Dan Beyer on Fox. Don't take any of my gambling advice. Coming up next on Fox Sports Radio. Yeah, this is it. It's over. It's done with. We'll explain next year on FSR.
Be sure to catch the live edition of the Doug Gottlieb Show weekdays at 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific.
Do you ever hear songs, Dan, that just bring you back to a simpler time?
Oh, sure. Absolutely.
This was one. My dad used to jam out to this pretty hard back in the early 90s or whatever it was, mid-90s. But every time I hear this song, I think of I think of my pops, who's still doing well back in Connecticut. But
that's great. I will say this. It's never that I disliked Huey Lewis in the News. It was never the case. I have more of an appreciation now as I'm older. I liked, you know, his songs younger, but now have more of an appreciation of Huey Lewis in the News. So
yeah,
I think a lot of people feel that, right? I mean, like, yeah, Jay Stu, executive producer.
I think what we have to appreciate is that one of the biggest albums of the 80s, and their biggest album was called Sports. Like, woo, I don't know if that gets enough credit. It's just called Sports.
And it was them playing pool, wasn't it? Wasn't that the cover? Like, I thought they were playing pool on that cover of that album as well.
Sports.
I like when you keep it simple. You know, it's just, this is what it is. And yeah. No confusion.
We've had, and by the way, on this network over the years, we've had good discussions about just the term sport. You know, like, is this good for sport? You know, as a
sport,
plural. Like drugs. You know, like doping in sport. I love the phrase of sport. Iowa Sam's been working today.
Yes, working for the weekend. I can confirm that, yes, the album of Sports features Huey Lewis with a coat over his shoulder, and then the rest of the band sitting in the background around a bar, and there's a pool table there. So
okay, see, I knew that there was
billiards.
Yeah, I thought maybe they were in action, but no, it looks like that a game was about to be played with the Reacher. I don't know what the official term is, but if you needed it, was there for Huey Lewis in the News if they were going to play pool. If this is it, is this the reason that Sam played it back, is because, Aaron, this is it. It's the unofficial end of summer is today.
That's right.
And this is listen, I understand Memorial Day is not about vacations and grilling dogs and going out there and just having a good barbecue and stuff like that. We're remembering the soldiers and everyone that we had lost in war. Memorial Day, I understand that completely. But it's also the unofficial start of summer, and this is now kind of the unofficial end of summer. And there's also, we got 4th of July smack dab in the middle. I would argue that of those weekends that you try to get away and do stuff, I know Labor Day is the end, but with football on the horizon, I'm not sure if it's not the best of the three to be able to, you know, to go away and do what you have to do, because it's kind of like a last hurrah before the fall and winter hits.
So for us in sports, it's so different because I love college football the way that I do. In many years, I covered it. You know, when I was at FoxSports.com, would go to games sometimes. I never really had a Labor Day off. I'm more of a Memorial Day guy, and part of it, Dan, might be you're a Wisconsin guy, I'm a Connecticut guy. It really is like the first weekend that
True.
You're outside,
yes.
All that stuff. And again, to go back to what we do as a profession, I love July 4th because unless you cover baseball in most given years, it is that one time a year where it's like you could just sit back, relax, have fun. You don't have to worry about too much. Every year is a little different. I know this year the NBA Finals were going on, but for the most part, it's the one holiday every year, Dan. You know how we operate. You got Thanksgiving football. You got NBA basketball on Christmas. That's the one that we get to relax a little bit.
I'll say this. I think 4th of July is third. You know, like your point about the unofficial start of summer is true. The reason I put 4th of July 3rd on my list is because the other ones are on Monday, so it's automatic three-day weekend. Where if the 4th is on a Wednesday, you know, you may only get one day off of work and have to go back on Tuesday.
Great call.
Yeah. Anyway, we hope you had a blast with us this summer on Fox Sports Radio. The fall should be amazing. Thanks to Jay Stu, Iowa Sam, Ralph Irvin, and to you, Aaron Torres. It's been fun.
Thank you, sir. I appreciate you having me, man.
Happy Labor Day. He's Aaron Torres. I'm Dan Beyer. This has been the Doug Gottlieb Show on Fox Sports Radio.